attending. Before I start, I would like to let you know that I've had a slight change in my talk from my abstract, because today I would like to sort of take up on Ingrid's plenary talk on Monday, where she was talking about how crucial language proficiency is to get access to employment among migrants of certain ethnic backgrounds. In Australia. And she was also talking about the example of the English-only movement in the United States, in the sense that language policies and language ideologies, how they're often meant to promote social inclusion in the first place, but in fact they often function to work against people of minority backgrounds. So in my paper, I would like to give some examples to highlight these particular issues through a case of the case study of Japanese flight attendants who are working for an Australian airline. Now, I was talking about my paper on flight attendants the other day with Yuko-san, she's here, and she actually asked me if I myself wanted to be a flight attendant when I was younger, and my answer was yes, I did. I had a lot of pragmatic desire for being a flight attendant, and so did many of my Japanese female friends at that time. And I've told you one of the reasons why. This was a TV series which was aired in 1983. On TBS and sponsored by Japan Airlines. It was one of the most popular TV shows in the 1980s. It's a fantastic marketing strategy by Japan Airlines. Well, this show had a lot of impact on women like me, teenagers like me at that time, because up to then, the public image of flight attendants was that they are elite women. Sophisticated, and they're fluent in English, they're super international women. However, the main character in this show, Chiaki, the third one from the left, she was the complete opposite. And she was the slowest and the clumsiest woman you would ever meet in your life. So it kind of gave me and my friends some kind of both attribute. The show is about her dream to become a flight attendant for Japan Airlines and her romance with the instructor, one in the middle. And of course, it was also about building friendship, being part of the airline team with her fellow trainees. Of particular interest to my talk today is episode 10. It was about training, getting trained on in-flight service in English. As you would expect, Chiaki gets really nervous on the first training day. She can't get a word of English. She can't even say, "May I help you?" And she ends up in tears because without passing the final English performance exam, she can't be a flight attendant. And at this point, her boyfriend slash instructor comes to rescue. knows what she's like with others. And so what he decides to do is, just before the performance exam, he asks her to come to the side and says, "I've just had this and that's an alcoholic drink," and he's drunk, and all of a sudden her English improves. She's so fluent, and the examiners are like, "Wow, she's so fluent." And she passes the exam and becomes a full-fledged flight attendant. Not too sure about the idea of drunk flight attendant serving on my flight. But the point that I wanted to make here is that flight attendant has been really tremendously a popular occupation for and among Japanese women for many decades. And it's a highly gendered occupation, as we see in episode 10, which is closely tied with the ability to speak English in terms of getting employed and getting the job done. It's important to have English. So it's a very interesting occupation for me to look at, because it's kind of linked with my previous work with Ingrid on the ideology of English in Japan. What we found was, well, people kindly talked about our Ingrid talk, but what we found was a lot of young women in Japan, they consider English as a kind of ticket out of Japan, the hierarchical and chauvinistic society, to the West. And as Joseph talked about, they sort of look at English as the guaranteed access. We give them guaranteed access and also success in an international career in Western countries. So what I kind of wanted to do is, in my pregnancy studies, to see, so what happens if once they have enough English, and then what happens once they have their dream job as a flight attendant in a Western country? Do they feel happy? Do they feel successful? How do they hang out with their co-workers and try to fit into the workplace? So these are the questions that were emerging in my head, and to explore those questions, I interviewed some Japanese flight attendants, women who were already working for an Australian airline, and I was interested in identifying, finding out linguistic and workplace practices and discourses that seem to underlie their experience of social inclusion and exclusion in their particular workplace. This study actually comes out of a larger ethnographic study on this. It's funded by Macquarie University and directed by Ingrid Pillar. And for this paper, I'm looking at the data, which are semi-structured interviews and field notes, which I collected from four Japanese flight attendants working for an Australian airline. And I also wanted to find out about their work environment, their company. So I looked at their company website and advertisements. Looking at their company website, I found that one of the most consistent ways in which the company constructed itself is that they are an Australian and low-cost airline, maybe a little bit of giveaway here, that provides the best of Australian and Asian hospitality. And this representation was most evident in the section called Our People on their website. It's a rather long text, so I'm not going to read through, but I wanted to show you was, as marked in red, there's a lot of emphasis on presenting itself as low cost, and however, despite their low cost identity, marked in blue, they guarantee that their service is top class, and it's not only the Australian hospitality, whatever that is, but also Asian hospitality that is in offer. And finally, marked in green is their commitment, their claim that they are committed to social inclusion of their workers, in a sense that they are they're trying to say that they're doing their best to make their workers feel being proud of being part of this airline team. As we will see in a minute, there is a little bit of gap between their claim and my participants' experience. But for now, I just want to introduce you to the three national groups of flight attendants working on this airline. At that time of the interview, there were three national groups of flight attendants, and I don't think I have time to go into much details, but the points I'd like to highlight here is the Japanese flight attendants get paid more than Australian or Thai flight attendants. Some of the reasons are that for this airline and also for Australian tourism in general, Japan has been one of the most important markets for at least two decades. And so my participants' understanding of their market value, their labor value, is that they feel valued, and then they feel that they are hired for their bilingual skills in both English and Japanese. Whereas they sort of talk about Thai flight attendants as being treated as a cheap labor, because seeing that their salary is significantly lower, this is justified by the fact that they're based in Thailand, and that's considered the average income, and they don't even get any sort of language allowance for the Thai language, which is significantly undervalued. And but since this year, however, their sense of their self-worth or market value has changed quite dramatically, because this particular airline, they opened another operational base in another Asian country, Singapore, and apparently they had a CC, Japanese flight attendants, have been hired from Japan and relocated to Singapore for the salary of 1,200 Australian dollars. So that's significantly lower than what my participants are earning at the moment. And this was really bad news for my participants, because they feel like they're becoming really disposable to the company, because they have this fear that maybe after their contract expires, then they'll be replaced by those cheap labor Japanese flight attendants. Yeah, so that was what Joseph was talking about, a lot of people competing for the job that they desire. And so now, moving on to my participants, there are four, and Julie, Eddie, Yoko. They were hired in Japan and relocated to Sydney, and Funye was locally hired. They all grew up in Japan and studied English quite passionately. And but before joining this airline, they spent quite a lot of time overseas, including Australia and some other English-speaking countries. And they're trying to learn English over there and trying to get work experience using English and Japanese. And they joined the company, this particular airline, in 2007 with a three-year contract. So we are looking at a group of highly proficient speakers of English with the, given their background. They have a lot of training and work experience in customer service, tourism-related company industries, but except for Judy, actually, it was their first time to become a flight attendant. So they're like, you know, when they told me that when they got the job, they were over the moon, and very happy about getting the job. Reading some literature about flight attendants and how hard the job is, I was sort of expecting that they would be telling me that it's a hard job and so on. So when I started to interview them individually, I was a bit surprised that they thought that their job was really easy, the easiest job ever. As in the quote from Judy, it's the easiest job ever. There's absolutely nothing you have to think about after you finish your flight. And this has a lot to do with the fact that the participants think that the company is really slack, they're low cost, they don't care about the customer service, and but at the same time they kind of liked the workplace because compared to Japanese companies, airlines, and tourism companies, they think that people are more friendly there. The workplace is egalitarian, everybody's easygoing, and so on and on. But when I sort of started to ask more specific questions. It's not like, how is it? I started to ask them as to how they're going at the workplace, how they interact with customers and their co-workers and so on. And then I started to hear sort of different stories and different kind of picture emerged. And for the rest of the paper, I'd like to focus on those two issues that are linked with their language proficiency, identity, and the experience of social exclusion in their workplace. As we've seen earlier, the company is trying to promote the idea of Asian hospitality, but my participants said that some Australian clients, they're not so happy to see too many Asian flight attendants on Australian Airlines. Well, this is what they said to me. If there are too many Thai and Japanese flight attendants in the flight to Bali, they aren't happy. Like, why so many foreigners on an Australian airline? I know some flight attendants are asked, why are you working on an Australian airline if you can't speak English? It's a little bit odd down the bottom because, I mean, they are proficient speakers of English, and obviously if they weren't, they wouldn't have been able to get this job because there is this language requirement when they apply for the job. So this is like a classic example of what Ingrid and also Carmelo was talking about this morning, in terms of language being sort of used as a substitute for racial discrimination. And the problem is, whether it's valid or not, the customer's comment about their linguistic efficiency, their linguistic identity aside. The thing is, the airline is increasingly aware of this kind of negative response to the Asian flight attendants. And what's happening is that there are less and less Asian flight attendants assigned to international flights, which are packed with Australian customers, particularly flights to Hawaii and Bali. And my participants think that this, they think that this is like a corporate strategy to maintain a white English-speaking identity of the airline, so they feel excluded, and they are very unhappy about this, and they think this is unfair, because basically flights to Hawaii and Bali are considered as popular assignments. But at the same time, they told me that they don't feel like they can raise this issue to the management because, from what I hear from them, they sort of have internalized this problem as their own fault, in the sense that they're not white, they're not Australian, and they're not native speaker of English. Related to this issue is the English-only policy at work. My participants talked a lot about this issue. This policy is that it's imposed by the management, and this goes unless they are dealing with customers from Japan or Thailand, all the flight attendants are required to speak only English and only English while they're wearing the uniform. And if they're caught speaking Japanese or Thai, they're often reported apparently by their Australian co-workers to the in-flight manager. And this is what happened to Yoko, and she said, some Japanese girls speak to me in Japanese, and so I speak back in Japanese, but then I'm being watched by Aussies. And they tell me later that I shouldn't be speaking Japanese. The managers always say, speak English when you are wearing the uniform, because our customers think you are representing our company. The discourse of the English-only policy and the practice that go with it, that creates a lot of anxiety among my participants. because being deported affects not only their reputation as a team worker, but also their performance review and promotional prospects. My participants think that it's kind of unreasonable because sometimes it's quicker to sort of exchange a few sort of words with the co-workers from the same country, but they actually make a conscious effort in switching back to English as soon as they see an Australian co-worker coming inside. Just to sum up my talk, I want to talk about the issue of promotion prospects too, because most of my participants don't think they have a hope for it because they have the sort of issue with their own sort of non-native speaker identity and so on. But I'll talk about that in the paper, which I hope we have published. To sum up my talk, for my participants, this job was a dream come true. But it sounds like having worked for this airline for some time, they are sort of now feeling disillusioned about this career. For one thing, as I talked about it, despite their linguistic skills, language resources, and work experience, they feel like they are quite disposable. As we talked about the cheaper Japanese flight attendants coming in. And for another thing, they have this low sense of job satisfaction and sense of belonging to the company, due largely to this mistrust towards the management and also tension between them and Australian co-workers in the context of the English on policy. Right. And, well, as Ingrid talks about it, some language policies work to promote social inclusion in the workplace, and yet this probably is another case that sort of works in different